Buildings, the scientists say, account for 39% of our global greenhouse gas emissions. So that's a lot, you know, to build them and then to run them. We're going to have to design, build, and later operate buildings differently so that they're less impact on the environment.
Welcome to the Happy Engineer Podcast, the place where we help engineers to build your career, balance your life, and be happy. My name is Zach White, a former engineer now turned CEO, lifestyle engineering coach, and your host. I believe that success without fulfillment is failure. Join me each week as we bring you an inspiring leader or message to help you enjoy both. Thanks for investing time with me today. Now let's do this. What does it really look like to go green in your industry? I mean, we've all heard about sustainability. Maybe you actually hold a sustainability engineering degree, but how are the trends towards leadership in energy and environmental design impacting the work that you do today? And more importantly, the work that you'll do in the years and decades to come? No corner of industry is going to be left out when it comes to sustainable trends. So you're going to want to pay attention to our guest today. He is one of the world's leading voices in the green building industry and sustainability, Charlie Cicchetti. Charlie is the CEO of Green Building Education Services. He is the host of the Green Building Matters podcast, and he brings an incredible depth of expertise in what's going on in this space that we can all benefit from. And you may think, oh, I'm not a civil or construction engineer. This isn't for me. But we go into so many other topics that you'll not only find fascinating, but critically important as you think about the future of your own career. Everything from healthy buildings and the considerations you want to understand for the future safety of yourself in the workplace, but also the mindset around career advancement when it comes to credentials, certifications, and ongoing education, a topic that is hotly debated and I often get misquoted or misunderstood around. Charlie and I go deep into that and I cover it more in the debrief, so stick around. I think you're going to find this conversation not only relevant and fascinating to the climate that we're in right now, but to the future that we all want to consider as we have an impact on the world around us through the powerful engineering work and leadership that you do each and every day. Don't forget, we have a community to plug in and engage in this conversation as well. So after this interview, when you're done with the show, jump into the Happy Engineer community on Facebook and let us know, what did you take away? What actions will you take as a result of this conversation? And I give a really specific action and challenge in the debrief that I would love to hear your results around. So jump in and share because I'm super excited to see what you came up with. There's a link right there in the show notes for you to jump in and join the group. Can't wait to see you there. It's growing fast. Last time I checked, we had over 500 of you in the group. Welcome. So glad to have you. And I cannot wait for you to apply what you take away from this powerful conversation with Charlie Cicchetti. Let's do this. Charlie, awesome to have you here. Thanks for making time to be with me and the happy engineers out there. Welcome to the show, man.
Zach, you know, I love podcasts and I'm glad we're growing our relationship here. Thanks for having me on today.
It's a pleasure. And yeah, just shameless plug for Charlie's amazing podcast, Green Building Matters. Go check that out after this. But Charlie, I think if you're open to it, there's so much about your own story, things I want to dig into, but you're also one of the global leaders when it comes to the green building industry. And I'd love to geek out and actually dive right into that and just tap into that expertise for a minute. And of course, the environmental and civil engineers are going to know more of this than people like myself who come from the mechanical engineering world. But I want to ask the kind of ignorant question, if you're willing to help me out, set the stage here. So green buildings, everything, all the acronyms that come with it, LEED and USGBC and all of this, like, just kind of give us the terms. Let's define the terms for a second. When we talk about a green building, like, what are the critical elements that we need to understand to actually wrap our heads around this space and what's so important. What sure. makes a green building green, Charlie?
You know what? I'm glad you're asking it this way, because sometimes I don't get asked this. Let's go back, keep it simple. So we have our ground rules here. You know, a green building, I think most people at first think it's energy efficient. Well, that's definitely part of it. Sure. You know, maybe we built the building, if it's a new building, out of some eco-friendly materials. Maybe we save water in the restrooms. Maybe we put a white roof on top of the building to reflect light and shed heat. You know, maybe we have bike racks outside. Maybe we have solar panels on the site. So a green building can be any of all those things, right? I think a green building, in my opinion, definitely needs to focus on energy efficiency, water efficiency first. But then there's so many other things we could do. And that's where a program, Zach, like LEED came out 22 years ago. And I said, hey, you know what? To really get a LEED certification, you have to do prerequisites, no points for it, at least these minimum items. Save more energy than the current energy code you would have built to in that city. You have to save a certain amount of water in the restrooms. You have to do some things. So green buildings, though, I think it's about how can this building be less of an impact on the environment? That is, in the highest level, simplest of terms, a program like LEED, which stands for Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design, that does come from the U.S. Green Building Council, a 501c3 nonprofit. It's a very entrepreneurial nonprofit based in Washington, D.C., and they've just kind of helped create and speed up this overall green building movement.
I love that. One thing that connects in my mind when you talk about this is the idea of lean manufacturing and the Toyota way. And everybody got into the tools and the specific application of 5S or Kanban or whatever. Sure. But there's the heart behind lean. So you mentioned a couple prerequisites and must-haves that come with the certifications. But what's the actual intention and the heart behind green buildings?
Sure. Lean construction, right? It's all about waste and efficiency. And I love it. I think the heart behind green buildings, because maybe later we'll talk healthy buildings. Green buildings, again, what's my building's impact on the environment? There's other programs. There's LEED. There's other programs around the world in different countries, but the LEED has one out. You know, I think it really started to force us to design, build, and later operate buildings differently. And so the U.S. Green Building Council actually started in 1993, and the first LEED buildings weren't certified until the year 2000. I didn't get into LEED till about 2005. I was working for a very large real estate developer, and luckily, they were an early adopter of LEED. And that's where I cut my teeth on just the whole concept of green buildings, doing better what you normally would have done, code minimum, et cetera. But I think really where it came from is it's time to transform. This has to happen. And kudos to those that really started this movement. We're going to have to design, build, and later operate buildings differently so that they're less impact on the environment.
This has popped in my head as you're describing it, Charlie, and maybe you have insight to this, maybe not. But if I zoom out from green buildings from just a moment and talk about sustainability and environmental impact as a whole, where does, you know, construction and a green building rank in your mind, at least, or maybe if you have any data to support this, versus other areas of environmental impact and sustainability that are being pursued globally right now? So you think about agriculture as a big one, or we think about the actual production of energy as a big one. Like, what, where does green buildings fit? And is there any, hey, this is, it's huge, that's why it's getting so much more attention now? Or I don't know, what's your thought on that?
You know, buildings, the scientists say, account for 39% of our global greenhouse gas emissions. So that's a lot, you know, to build them and then to run them. So buildings and homes and, you know, kind of the built environment. And so that's why it's just needed this focus, right? It's so important. Now, there are other things you alluded to, right? There's renewables, there's going all electric with our buildings. There's definitely even some legislation getting passed just where even corporates, Fortune 100, Fortune 500, have to start to be transparent and be like, hey, here's our impact in our operations and supply chain. But I'd say 39% of global greenhouse gas emissions, the studies have showed for many years, are related to buildings. In the United States, construction is $10 trillion, I believe. That's a tremendous amount of our GDP. And so just know that there are, we might need to fact check that, but I'm pretty sure that is close to the number. there's a lot happening in and around here. So if you were to go to the biggest impacts, gosh, if we made that better and less impact on the environment, we followed some rules here and everyone got it and they were educated on it. Okay, I think we can make some pretty big change.
That's a huge number. So full disclosure, I have not fact checked the 10 trillion either, but like 39%, that's bigger than I expected, Charlie, but it's actually really exciting to me. And I know so many engineering leaders that I talk to now, in, regardless of industry, whether they come from a construction, architecture, civil background or not, are passionate and invested in sustainability in a new way, in a bigger way than they've ever been before. And so I hope people are excited just to hear that. Like, there's a real chance to move the needle in the work that you are spearheading here with green buildings. So that said,
I think U.S. GDP is about 20 trillion, and we'll have to look exactly, but it might only be about 1 trillion a year in construction. I apologize, I don't have that number, but my point
All right.
It is a big part of this.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. If it starts with a T, it's a huge factor. And I think, of course, the fun part about having an engineering leader as a listener today is they can go do their homework and check us, and that's all right. So post in our channels what the numbers are, folks. But Charlie, tell me for you then, there's a clear impetus for why this is a space that the work matters. So what are the headwinds? What are the challenges right now that you're seeing in getting people to embrace and adopt green building best practices and lead?
You know, I've been doing this about 15, 16 years. And I really did start with those kind of premier projects. So I was kind of fortunate to have early adopters of lead. What should we do? So I think in the simplest terms, it's not someone that asks, what do we have to do? What's the local mandate? I'm going to get fined. I'm going to get penalized. It's what should we do? And so I think those are the better clients for me and my consulting firm and our education company. Yeah, I mean, headwinds, you know, my dad asked me this sometimes, Zach, is, hey, depending on who's in office, does that affect your green building companies, Charlie? And I said, well, so many of the mandates are now state and city and even just corporate sustainability mandates. So there's so much that's baked in. While maybe the federal legislation may change every 48 years in office, like, there's so much that's already like, we're going to do it for these reasons. And now you have to do it. You know, I live here in Atlanta, Georgia. Some of the small towns are in Atlanta. If you're building a building over 25,000 feet, you have to do LEED or EQUAL, right? That's nice to see even in a small town here in Georgia. So I think the headwinds for a while had been just not having the federal government always lined up with some of these carbon goals. I think coming out of the pandemic a little bit, there was a shift in focus to healthy buildings, not just green buildings. What's the difference? That was a lot of people were asking. The short answer on that is green buildings are less impact on the environment. Healthy buildings, hey, what's my impact on the people inside of the building or the home or the school or the church day to day? Is this a healthy place to be? It's more about that personal kind of health and productivity than impact on the environment. That's the main difference here. We could talk
about that. Yeah, that's interesting.
But yeah, I think the headwinds are, you know, still needs to make good business sense if you're really going to make some big change. So we oftentimes have to calculate some paybacks or, hey, this is going to give you a market advantage, or it does line up with your corporate sustainability goals. Sometimes you got to remind a client that too. Here's where it helps with your other stakeholders. Even though we know it's right for the environment, sometimes this does have cost to it, and we have to show those paybacks. This still makes good business sense.
Yeah. So those economics, what's the number one driver of ROI or payback from an organizational lens? If we just put a pure financial lens on a green building decision, what are those economics?
So we get to work greening of existing buildings. Like, I love going to New York City and greening up a 30-year-old, 40-year-old building. And so those ones, if it's deep retrofits, those could be a little bit longer paybacks. But even there, major energy saving projects, usually 2 to 4 year paybacks on a new construction lead project. On a new construction lead project, oftentimes it's only 1% premium for your lead and commissioning and energy modeling, just the things to really go for it. If you've baked in some green attributes, and then that payback can be 1 to 3 years, depending on the project size. So I'd say, so oftentimes these paybacks have gotten down to the 2 or 3 year mark. Now, I'm not talking about a very sophisticated system that's going to have longer paybacks, but just normal green building best practices a lot of our clients won't even look at it unless it's a two-year payback. So, you know, picture a large office building that just hasn't changed out its toilets and urinals since the 1980s. If we go in and do a retrofit, next thing you know, you're going from 3.5 gallon this to 1.28 gallon toilet there. That's a very quick payback, sometimes less than 6 months, just in your water and your sewer savings. So I think the overall paybacks for the mainstream good green initiatives, man, they're pretty solid. Now, renewables can be a little longer. I'm in Georgia. If I put extra solar panels on my house, it could be a 7-year payback maybe on my house. But I think that would be the exception with some of the renewable projects. Just normal, good, green projects, pretty quick paybacks line by line.
That's really good. I mean, I'm thinking back to my engineering days at Whirlpool and big capital projects that we would do in product development. A 3-year payback was like a threshold. If you crossed, then it was a no-go. But a 2-year payback was like green light, man. That's a project we would take all day. So I love that, just to know it's actually that much sense on the economic side, plus the actual benefit to the corporate values and the impact that it has on the people who are in it. And let's circle back to this healthy buildings comment really quick. I know we don't have time to go into all the details of that, but it's really interesting given the time we're just coming out of, you know, recording this in late August of 2022. I certainly can't say that the pandemic is over, but at least the most challenging months or years for most people are in the past. And I'm just curious, you know, are there practices there that are now becoming standard and even part of the LEED or similar types of requirements? Or what's that look like?
I feel the pandemic's in the rear view. Obviously, COVID's still hopping around, but it has made anyone that has a facility of any kind, even our own personal homes, which for some of us, right, maybe hybrid work from home some, it's, hey, what's my air quality like here? What's my filter? So it's brought a lot of awareness as, oh, healthy buildings, healthy homes. So there were two programs before the pandemic that dealt with healthy buildings. One's called WELL. It's actually not an acronym like LEED. Just means wellness, real estate, a healthy building. WELL and FITWELL, F-I-T-W-E-L, only one L on that one. FitWell.org. That's a CDC-backed research program. So before the pandemic, Zach, there was two programs. How do I get my building certified as a healthy building? WELL or FITWELL? Two great programs. My companies educate about each. We also do the consulting and engineering work for each. Very good programs. Pandemic hits, and then it's like, holy cow, my phone's ringing. Charlie, how do I get my occupants back to my building? You know, I'm trying to get these tenants back, big office building in some major market here in the U.S. And we're like, look, we need to do a healthy building certification that's going to boost someone's confidence to prove, you know, hey, a third party looked at it, and this is a healthy space. During the pandemic, what happened is each of those programs that you can get a full plaque for, like a LEED plaque, came out with a seal, kind of a quicker win. And it was all about pandemic response. And so filtration, air testing, policy on even hand washing stations and you know, what kind of cleaning chemicals do we use, and really going through a whole slew of what should we do for pandemic response. And so if you walk into a building and you see a seal, a sticker that says, well, health safety rated, that means that it has been approved. It's got an excellent pandemic response program. It's a healthier building. But if you see a plaque that says well certified, that means they went through the full gamut and they really have designed and built that as a healthy building, healthy systems, healthy space. Two great opportunities here. But there's the seal, which is more pandemic response. There's the full plaque, well or fit well. And that's more like LEED, which is a very comprehensive program, third-party reviewed. But that's what we experienced kind of coming out of the pandemic. But what's changed? What's stuck, I should say? Internet of Things for kind of what we call wellness thermostats. Well stats, just real-time IAQ. And I'm sure a lot of your engineers are probably specifying this out. Not just CO2, not just temperature, but particulate matter, PM2.5, PM10, carbon monoxide, formaldehyde, total chemicals, total VOC. So real-time IAQ, instead of maybe having someone come in periodically to manually test, definitely increasing our air changes during those seasons when we can bring in more fresh air, of course, but still balance that, right, Zach, with energy savings. So does it fight a little bit? Sure. Always has, right? Energy savings and air quality. But I'd say IoT devices for real-time IEQ, better filtration. And then just really looked at our janitorial programs. Do we do green cleaning? If we haven't, man, it's time to finally take a look here. I think during the pandemic, a lot of buildings just bleached everything, and that's bad, right? So it's like, okay, let's get back to regularly scheduled programming here and continue.
It takes me back to, what was the movie? My Big Fat Greek Wedding with the Windex, right? everything with Windex. Oh, Charlie, there's so much in here in the technical stuff I'd love to explore, but
if I may.
Go ahead, please.
All right, I fact-checked it. It was bothering me. The global construction GDP, not U.S., global construction is $10 trillion every year.
Okay, okay.
So that's it. There you go.
Perfect. All right, so global construction, $10 trillion of global GDP annually. Wow, okay. Still a huge number. Tease, man. I can't even wrap my head around trillion, Charlie. That's such a big number. So before I ask you about the future of this space and some of the things with what your companies are doing, will you take us back to what actually ignited your personal passion for this? So you mentioned, basically, you've been in the world of green buildings since its inception, and you were doing real estate at the time, it sounds like. Tell us, where did the fire ignite that this was a space you wanted to get actively involved in and ultimately become one of the world's leaders in this space? Where did it begin?
Yeah, my background real quick, Georgia Tech. I grew up in a small town in the North Georgia Mountains, even though my mom's from Oregon, my dad's from New York. Kind of was around construction with my dad's side of the family, but just got into construction, real estate, and then green buildings. It goes back to Opus Corporation, who was that early adopter of LEED, family-owned, $2.2 billion a year in new development company that just, they got it. Everything they were building in the 2000s, which was early LEED, I was really learning all about these programs, and I'm like, gosh, this is fantastic. 2008 happened to all of us, and even though it was a great company, I thought I'd be there a while. I had the entrepreneurial itch, and sometimes you need a kick in the behind, and I got laid off with 2,000 other people, and then went ahead and started my first company and started my entrepreneurial career in all things green building. So I knew Construction Zach wasn't going to be the same, and so for me, 2008, my wife and I bought our first house together in January. We had our first son, Blake, in June. In November, got laid off. Went back to work the next day with the construction company I had also worked with. And then next thing you know, we started our green building consulting and training firm just a few months after that. So I always knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. Later, I figured out I wanted to be kind of a green building entrepreneur. And as they say, the rest is history. So really built up our consulting and engineering firm, new buildings, existing buildings, quite a bit of online education. You've seen that. Just really enjoying everything we're doing in this green building movement.
Yeah.
There's 200,000 LEED professionals in the world that have passed that LEED Green Associate or LEED AP specialty or old school legacy exam. But there's only about 360 that are called LEED Fellows. And I'm one of the youngest LEED Fellows in the world. So there you go. There's the little brag. Yes.
Well deserved.
Just love this movement.
And so, I mean, first of all, anybody who hasn't checked out Charlie's full stats, like go look him up. There's a lot more he could have said here. But sustainability and environmental concern in general, loving and caring, it's kind of hip. It's cool to be green, right? It has been for a while. But everybody picks up that from somewhere. And I'm curious for you, especially in a real estate being a world that's pretty cutthroat, and it's, you know, a lot of people in real estate could care less about green buildings. So who or what actually planted that value in you of really caring about doing this the right way for a sustainable future?
I'd have to give credit to my mom from Oregon. I mean, I just remember the early days of visiting her family on that, on the West Coast, and just even how they just did recycling so much earlier than any other state, stuff like that. And then I grew up in the North Georgia Mountains, which there wasn't a lot to do as a teenager growing up there. You pretty much do outdoor activities, you know, in this small mountain town. And before I came out to the big city of Atlanta to go to school at Georgia Tech. So I think just being close to nature, just an appreciation for my parents about being resourceful, that definitely must have stuck with me. You know, then I get into my college years, my early career in construction. At that time, didn't know any better. building some concrete superstructures with a great company. And then Opus, I think when Opus was the early adopter, and I saw this $2.2 billion a year company saying, and they're privately held at the time, right? They're saying, look, this is the way to do it. This is the future. And so I think I connected those two, definitely knew. And then, you know, as a dad, I've got three boys. I think once you have kids too, it's not for everybody. When you do, I think it's like, man, what am I leaving for them in their future? Not just hopefully a little inheritance, but like, you know, can I make this place a little bit better for them? So I think it was a combination of those three things, Zach.
I think that's really powerful. We'll say a special thank you to your mom for planting the seed of resourcefulness and sustainability in you. And if she could see, and if any of us could see the full impact of the work that you've done rippling through the world and through that $10 trillion industry annually, that's awesome, Charlie. So
thank you.
Let's talk about the work your company's doing. You mentioned it earlier that consulting and training, certifying folks in all these different aspects of LEED and the various programs. And if I saw correctly on your website, it's over 150,000 clients have worked with you and your organizations to gain those, you know, various credentials. And we chatted before we hit record today about just how important that work is in not just changing the industry and the future of our world, but for the individual careers of these engineers and leaders who are stepping into those training programs. So maybe first tell us about Green Building Education Services and what you do, but then the kind of perspective you have around the importance of these credentials and the education involved.
Yeah, so GBES.com, Green Building Education Services, was actually started in late 2007 when this whole LEED movement, credentials, LEED AP, LEED Accredited Professional, is just kind of really getting ramped up. And yeah, you fast forward over these years, we've helped 150,000 people around the world just get a little confidence, get a little encouragement, get some letters after their name that you need to use it, right? It's not just about those letters, but now I have a little confidence to go into that next meeting and talk about green buildings. Maybe what would it take to work on a LEED project? Or now there's the WELL AP, just as one other example, the healthy building, now WELL accredited professional, that credential. But I guess the highlight for me is I never knew I'd like to teach as much as I do. I mean, I love doing a one-day crash course, 7-8 hours, me give you all the secret tips. Here's what you need to know to pass the exam. Because it's nerve-wracking to have to study. Maybe especially if you've already been a professional for a little while, right?
Sure.
I definitely admire high school and college students coming out, taking their LEED exams to really be competitive in the marketplace. It's amazing. But I think if you haven't taken a computer-based exam that really, you know, this is going to help your career here in some way, it's a little intimidating. So, you know, one of our kind of unwritten core values at our education company, we have a whole team around it, Zach, just an incredible team, is encouragement. It's like, hey, Zach, you got this. We've helped a lot of people pass this exam. Watch out for this. You know, hey, do you learn best by reading? Here's a searchable study guide. Read that. Do you learn best by listening? Here's some MP3s. But no matter what, take the practice tests. They're just like the real exam. I think just in life, everybody needs a little more encouragement. So I think that's been one of our secrets to success as an online education company. We do in-person classes as well. But that reach, there's nothing better than earlier this year, I went to the Green Build Conference in Europe. And it was in Munich, talking about a lot of fun, traveling more post-pandemic. And people are coming up to me, Zach, hugging my neck. I've never met in my life saying, hey, I love your podcast. I love your webinars. You know, you've helped me with my credential. That helped me do this in my career. That's pretty fulfilling.
Oh, man. So you don't know this, but I'll tell you now that the one word that I anchor my life's legacy around is encouragement. And my company name is Oasis of Courage for a reason. And for those who've worked with us, you know more about the history there. I won't go into all of it now, but that makes me so happy to hear that encouragement is part of what you all do. You touched on this, and I think it's good. Anybody who's listened to me or has coached with me knows one of the things I say a lot is that knowledge is not power. You know, we only got half the story when we heard that quote, that knowledge is power, because knowledge by itself is not power. You can learn a lot of things and have no power if you don't use the knowledge. And you mentioned it as well. And It's not uncommon for me to tell my clients that you do not have a certification problem or a need another degree. You've already got your PhD and your MBA and your, it's like, you've got enough letters. We need to implement what you know. But at the same time, there's places where it's essential to close a gap around a credential to open doors in your career. And I just want to hear your experience with this. Maybe you can give, you know, that engineering leader listening some advice about when is the right time to say, I need a credential versus, you know, now you're just kind of addicted to knowledge. And then once you get a credential, how do you actually create value from it? How do you use that to advance?
Love it. Great just discussion around this. You know, because out of all those lead professionals we've helped train, not everyone actually gets to work on a lead project. So we actually have a separate, what we call project immersion class, where it's like, hey, if you've not really worked on a project, we're going to assign you, we're going to put you on a project and literally show you under the hood how this is going to work. So you're right. We're really good at what do you need to know to pass the exam? And then when you come over here, now what are those skills and templates? And hey, here's how you would run a meeting if you're on a green building project. So it's even forcing educators like us that have been doing this a long time. We realize there is this need for the hands-on side of it too. Now, if you're just studying for the credential, I might not want you to take the hands-on yet. So just know, I think there is an opportunity here for project immersion, kind of a master class on it. So I'm agreeing with you. But yeah, credentials. I mean, I took my first lead AP way back. It was called the lead new construction version 2.2 exam way back in 2008. And then in 2009, in my world, they came out with the lead green associate, the lead GA, which is 100 questions, multiple choice, high level. Where does this fit into green? And then you have your specialties. Some of your listeners might be more existing buildings, lead AP O plus M, operations and maintenance. Some are new construction, some are interiors or specialties. So now there's lots of credentials, and I definitely encourage everybody to pass at least a lead green associate. Get that foundational green building credential. I think there's other certificates out there. I actually would say some certificates should get a little more credit than maybe even just all the credentials. Now, this might be counterintuitive. I built up an education company about credentials, right? But we're about to roll out, for example, certificates. One's called ESG Data Analyst. We think there's this huge need for more ESG job titles. Who better than us to put out a 10-week course, but it's going to be hands-on. It's just going to be a little bit of the 101, but it's going to be a lot more of the 301. How do I really do the work? If 401 is how do I master it? So I'm trying to say I'm validating everything you're saying, which is there is a need to pass some closed book exams and get credentials. But we strategically are going to also offer more of the hands-on. How the heck do I go do it? And how do I get better at it? I think also it has a lot to do with trade organizations. I'm a big fan of way back AGC, Associated General Contractors, BOMA, Building Owners and Managers Association. A lot of your members are probably members of ASHRAE, right? Just lean into your trade organizations for the young professional networks, if that's you. Definitely volunteer even on the education committee to help pick what education is going to come through your local chapter and that membership. So you have a say in what they're going to throw resources at and the experts they're going to even bring in to get you exposed to. And so volunteer on some committees, obviously great for networking. So I am a big fan of education. Yes, degrees, credentials, and certificates. But I think I would try to answer it simply saying you don't have to have all the credentials in the world. Get the credentials that really, if someone's looking at your, you know, your business card or something, it's like, oh, wow, I recognize that credential, right? I think for lead, I've been fortunate. Like a lot of people understand there's a lead AP.
Yes.
And then, you know, if you do a certificate, tell people about it. I don't know all the certificates, but I would get the word out as here's why I did that. Here's what I got out of it. And I'd suggest you do it too. And I think that's something that we need to see more of because there's probably fantastic education out there that finally does shift to the hands-on side of things.
Well, there's two things I want to just put a little exclamation point behind. And also for the engineering leader listening to this, who's not in civil or construction or architecture, maybe they're a software developer and they're feeling like this conversation has nothing to do with them. This absolutely relates. And these two points you highlighted, one being practice. Actually practicing the skill and the knowledge. I just had this conversation with an engineering director earlier this week, Charlie, with how sports, you know, you practice 80% of the time and you play 20% of the time. But then in engineering, you go to school and practice 100% of the time for years, and then you get your first job and all you do is play. There's no more practice. It's like you learn everything in game time. And that's why the failures hurt so much more, because you don't actually get that chance to go take batting practice, you know, or the whatever the proverbial practice time would be. So I love that your organization is providing that. And my challenge to every engineering leader listening is, like, where can you go get some practice? Don't just get the letters after your name. Go get some reps. Go actually get in an environment where you can practice this, so that when you do have game day in your career, you're not stumbling over doing it for the first time. So, I mean, I don't know if you have anything else you'd add to that, but it's such an important point.
Man, what a great analogy. No, and I think, you know, try not to wait. There are places you hear volunteer, or even if you're at a firm and you're not assigned to the lead projects, you know what? Go ask your colleague who is, like, hey, I'm caught up on some other stuff. Man, I just got a few questions. Can I look at your scorecard? Can I pick your brain on that? And so just don't wait for it to be assigned to you. Don't wait for the reps to be assigned to you is all I'd add to what you just said. But fantastic analogy.
Yeah, it's so good. So good. And then the second piece is, you know, wherever you're at in engineering, if you're, again, in a totally different discipline, go find out what are those equivalent trade organizations and committees and member groups that you can be a part of, because maybe these specific ones Charlie mentioned don't apply to you if you're in software, for example, but there is a whole world that you can plug into, get networked with, et cetera. So again, don't think this only applies to one kind of engineering. This is for all of us. So go take action on that. Charlie, tell us about the future. There's so much in terms of where things are headed. And I'm just curious, if there were one or two things that excite you the most about the future of green buildings and either the technology involved or the trends around the requirements, or just what do you see coming that actually lights you up?
We talked a lot about healthy buildings. I'll just double down though to make sure, hey, you know a little bit about healthy buildings, even post-pandemic, what's going to stick? How is it going to affect your design? If someone's asking you, hey, is this a healthier design than you used to do? So check out those programs well and fit well, but healthy buildings, those devices, IoT, the wellness thermostats, that's definitely here to stay. I'd say, you know, with mandates, it's about transparency, but it's also about electrifying our buildings to get ready for all those renewables from the grid. But I'm excited about two additional things. The shift from operating carbon, Zach, to embodied carbon. So operating carbon is how energy efficient is the building. Still a lot of work to do there. That's a lot of what we do, say, with LEED and doing an energy model for a building or a tenant space that's not been built yet. So we still need to be more energy efficient. Luckily, there's a lot of mandates to do that and reduce our carbon for the operating side of things. But the shift is happening where it's not just operating carbon, but it's really a focus on embodied carbon. And embodied carbon is not just the materials. Well, that's a big part of it. Timber frame structures are better. Low carbon concrete is needed. But how about the entire supply chain? And even one of the technology tools we've built is, how do you green up your construction site in your construction phase? And how much of an impact is the even during construction embodied carbon impact? So I think there's a shift from operating carbon to embodied carbon we have to keep an eye on. I'll challenge your listeners with that. And then one more, digital twins. I think it's very important to be able to take Revit files from the designers, not just the architects, but the MEP teams and structural, and create a digital twin. So I can right click on this light, and there's 247 of that light in this building. The quantities are there. We don't have to count. Like, there's a lot of metadata coming out of a good designed Revit file. I don't know if you know this, 90% of construction projects over $5 million in value, they actually are drawn in Revit. So we can get that metadata and we can use it during other phases of design and construction. So we're starting to do more there with those digital twins. But then what about an as-built? What if we come in and 3D scan the building or the systems, and we preserve some tribal knowledge? Here's how to run that building the right way. You know, you can design the Tesla of a building, but if you don't run it like a Tesla, it's going to be pretty terrible. Yeah. So there's that handoff, that gap too, that knowledge transfer. And so one thing we're taking a stab at, Zach, is using digital twins plus our education company to hand off, here's how to run this building energy efficiently.
That's exciting. I first got exposed to Revit when I was working with the KitchenAid brand at Whirlpool Corporation. And we had one of the architects ask us for a Revit file for a KitchenAid stand mixer so he could put it on the commercial kitchen counter of the buildings that they're doing for a huge education facility that was going to have a bunch of mixers. And we kind of stood there with a blank face and stared at like, what are you talking about? what is a Revit file? I remember I had no clue at that time what it was. Like, can you take Pro Engineer CAD? Is that? And he's like, no, that's not what we're talking about. But
and that's a digital twin. You can make a digital twin of that stand mixer. You can make a digital twin of a building. And how do we use it? What information is in there? I love it.
Yeah, super cool. Man, well, Charlie, again, so many places we could go, but this has been tremendous. And before we wrap today, can you just tell the engineering leaders out there, where can they get plugged in with you, all the incredible work that you're doing with Green Buildings? Where's the best place to find more information?
Man, thanks. I've enjoyed our conversation a lot. So you asked me some questions I hadn't heard in a long time, but LinkedIn, I think, would be best. I'm active on there. So if anybody has a question, a follow-up, if you need to pass a lead exam or you're going in to take your tests in a couple of days and you need a couple of secret tips, I'll shoot you some confidence there and some tips. But just LinkedIn, Charlie Cicchetti, Cicchetti.
Awesome. And I cannot recommend highly enough, if you do need support in this space, to reach out to Charlie and his team at GBES, and we'll put all the links in the show notes. Take action on that. Don't delay. You're going to be in good hands, as you heard. Very encouraging team at GBES. So, Charlie, I'm really excited to hear your thoughts on this last question. We always end here. Great coaching. And I know you in education and training and as a coach yourself do this all the time. But we know that great questions come before great answers. Questions lead, answers follow. And you know, the engineering leader who's been listening to this is looking for better answers in their life. Maybe it's career advancement and growth, things going on in their world. What would be for you the best question that you would lead somebody with coming out of this chat today?
I'll give you a super quick fun one, then I'll give you a direct one. So first, what's on your bucket list? That's something I really love to talk to people about. Hey, what's just an experience, a trip? Just who knows? What's on your bucket list? But I would ask this question also. I would say, what do you want for this season? See, time is measured in two ways, Chronos and Kairos. And Chronos could be minutes, hours, days, weeks, months, years. Chronos, that's what we're all used to. But Kairos is seasons, a season of opportunity. A season could be a month, could be the next 3 months, could be like 6 months, but what do you want for this next season?
That's awesome. Really powerful concept in thinking about time differently. We could have a whole nother episode just about Kairos time. Oh, Charlie, thank you for taking us there. What a powerful question. I can't thank you enough for the time today, both Chronos and Kairos that you've dedicated to me and to the listeners. Just sharing tremendous knowledge. And Charlie, I want to just acknowledge you for the impact that you are having and will continue to have in the world and leaving that legacy for your boys and for all of us who want to enjoy a greener future. So thank you so much for that. And it's been an awesome pleasure to meet you and spend the time together today.
Thank you, Zach. Keep up the great work, man. This is amazing.
If you're an engineer and you want to be happier, healthier, and wealthier in your career and life, we would love to talk to you. In other episodes, I explain a bit more, but all you need to know is that I've carved out a limited number of $500 coaching sessions just for podcast listeners for free to gain extreme clarity on your current career blocks and barriers and to determine your personal action plan. Grab a time while they're still available on careerclaritycall.com. That's in the show notes. Click the big orange button, pick a time to chat for 15 minutes with one of our coaches, and they'll take care of the rest. Let's do this. Let's talk about credentials, certifications, advanced degrees, training, all of those opportunities that come your way to advance your career. Really powerful conversation today with Charlie, and specific to the world of green buildings, LEED, sustainability, etc. And you may not be in that industry. This may not apply directly to you, but it absolutely applies because every single one of my clients, whether they're right out of college starting their engineering career or they're at the director, senior director, or VP level, are asking questions when it comes to career development about what types of continuous training, credentials, certifications, you know, investments do you need to make to advance in your career? So I want to address that question because it's something that often gets confused in the message that I bring into the world often through the marketing and material that I put out there on LinkedIn and other places, where I specifically highlight the reality that very, very rarely is a credential or a certification the actual gap between where you're at in your career and where you want to be next. And I still believe that 100% because we've helped hundreds of engineering leaders to achieve promotions and make career transitions and increase their income and increase their fulfillment and impact in their career on their life. And so far, 0% of our clients have had their number one barrier to career growth be a certification. Okay, so I'm telling you, the data agrees that this is not the biggest thing, but that often gets interpreted as Zach doesn't like certifications. Zach doesn't believe in credentials. And that is not the case. Whether it's an MBA, a PhD, or a LEED sustainability certification in green buildings, I absolutely believe that targeted knowledge in the right areas is part of your career development journey. It absolutely is, just like earning your engineering degree in the first place. So how do we make those decisions? When is the right time for you? For the first thing, I want to encourage you not to think about it purely in a milestone way. I want you to think about ongoing education and credentials in an evergreen way. It's something that you're always in pursuit of and always considering and looking to invest in those things before you need it. We don't want to let a credential or certification become the actual barrier or roadblock. Now, like I said, I still do not believe that for 99.9% of the engineering leaders out there, that the number one barrier in your career right now is a certification. I don't believe that. But it does not mean that we want to ignore it. It's an always-on thing. It's something to pursue. So go find out for yourself what's the most important areas for you to continue to advance in targeted knowledge. Now, here's the most important second point I would give you. If you're going to pursue that credential, match it with an experience and an opportunity where you can implement and practice, receive mentorship and coaching, and actually build a competency, a skill set, a practiced skill set in that area as you build the knowledge. The biggest failure mode that I've witnessed is that people go out and pursue credentials as a parallel path to their career. They land the letters, but they never actually practice and use what they're doing except in side projects for the sake of earning that credential in the first place. And then you don't have the real experience to go along with it. So those are a couple quick things for you to keep in mind. It's not rocket science, all right? I hope this isn't something that's shocking or new to you, but I just want to address that point. Get a great mentor, get somebody in your life who can help you understand what you need to focus on. But paramount to everything in the space of building knowledge is making sure that you put that knowledge into practice immediately. Knowledge that is not implemented has no power. So that is my number one encouragement to you, is to remember everything that you're going to go learn, you need to put into practice immediately, get into action with it, or you're not going to create value in your career. Now, I actually want to come back and talk about something right where Charlie left us in those powerful questions at the finish line. He asked about your bucket list. I love the bucket list. Oh, okay. Why do I love the bucket list so much? It comes back to a really important truth that the starting point, the origin of all success in your life, the origin of achievement is desire. It's desire. It's wanting something more, wanting something new. If you don't have any desire, if your desire is at zero, then you will not consistently show up in your life, in your career, and do the hard things that it takes to achieve that next level of success and impact in your career. Desire is the starting point of all achievement. Napoleon Hill is famous for saying it, and it's true. So why do a bucket list? It's not just to be crazy and throw these wild ideas on a piece of paper. It's to stoke the flame of desire in your heart. I want you to get in touch with what it feels like to want something. Here's the truth. Lots of you have been burned by desires that were never met in your life. There's something that you really wanted. There's that dream that you've had that has not come true. Hey, maybe it goes all the way back to birthdays or Christmas as a kid when there was something that you asked your parents for and you didn't get it. And we give up on wanting things because it doesn't matter if I want it. That doesn't mean it's going to happen. And it feels safer to simply not want anything because then I never have to risk the negative emotion of not getting it, the fear of failure, or the pain of a desire unfulfilled. And let's face it, it can hurt. When you really, really want something and you really, really go after it and then you don't get it, that can hurt. That can be painful. I've been there. I know exactly what that feels like. It is not trivial, and I don't want to dismiss that, but so often we then become numb to getting in touch with that part of us that deeply desires things. I'll give you another truth around this. We often feel guilty about wanting things. We feel guilty about wanting more because let's face it, we're probably, you and I are in a great place in comparison to the majority of the world. If we are going to draw a comparison, the average engineering leader earns a great salary, has a great quality of life, and in comparison, it's hard to complain about what we have. Here's the deal. This is not about comparison. This is not about who deserves what, et cetera, et cetera. I want to make it clear. Every single person has infinite value. There is no difference in the worth of any human on the planet. And desiring something does not make you a bad person, even if you already have a lot. Desire is a natural part of your humanity. And when you get in touch with that deep burning desire inside you to go achieve something more, whether that's a better relationship with a loved one or a spouse, maybe that's a bigger and better career by whatever measure you define that as. That could be titles and income and promotions. It might be better in the sense of impact and products that you're excited about or better balance. You decide, you define it, but get in touch with desire. So coming back to the bucket list, the reason I love it so much is because it opens up this childlike spirit to go and want something again. So here's what I would love for you to do. This is a really simple action that you can take right now. Grab a piece of paper. You know, if you're driving or you're at the gym on the treadmill or something like that, then do this as soon as you get to your destination or you finish. Grab a piece of paper or grab a note in your phone. And I want you to write out 10 things that are on your bucket list right now. 10 things that are on your bucket list. Maybe there's some travel, places you want to go. Maybe there's some toys that you would love to have, that boat or that Lamborghini, whatever it is. Allow yourself to get a little wild. Dream about what are those things that you would love to be, that you would love to do, that you would love to have, or even that you would love to give. Maybe on your bucket list is to make a huge impact in an organization that is giving in a way that's meaningful to you. Whatever that looks like, I want you to write 10 of those down. And I want you to look at that list and just imagine how great it would be to have those in your life. No expectations, no judgments, no pressure, no timeline. The only purpose to write them down is to practice getting in touch with the feeling and the energy of desire. That's it. We do this exercise in an even bigger way in my coaching program for engineering leaders. And I can't tell you how many times someone will come back to me. We do more than 10, but they'll say, oh, this was actually really powerful to stretch myself back into this place of deep, authentic desire. So take some time, build your bucket list. Charlie is spot on. This is a powerful question, and I'm excited to hear what's on your list. And by the way, if you want to share some of those things, jump into our Facebook group and share them. I would love to see it. Become a part of the Happy Engineer community. This is a conversation, not a one-way street. It's such a pleasure to share this knowledge and these ideas and these actions with you, but we want to be a part of the journey alongside you. So get into the community, share what's been resonating for you, share your challenges, and share your bucket list. Hey, until next time, keep crushing comfort, create courage, and if you need help along the way, reach out to us at the Oasis of Courage. That's what we're here for. We specialize in helping engineering leaders to get to that next level and to do it in a way where you don't sacrifice your balance and you don't suffer burnout. And I'd love to show you how we do it. My friend, that's all we've got for this episode of the Happy Engineer Podcast. Thank you again for investing your time with me today. If you're like me, then maybe you'll take some notes and share this episode with your fellow engineers. Why? Because it will help you learn deeper, remember these insights, and take action. So share this episode with two or three friends just like you who are committed to building their career. Lastly, make sure to link up with us at oasisofcourage.com. Grab our free tools for career growth there in the Resource Hub, and schedule a free call with our coaching team today. Please just share this podcast with anyone who you think might enjoy it. Until next time, remember to crush comfort, create courage, and let's do this.